Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've also launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I have learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Our show today is titled Evidence of the Afterlife, where we will be talking about some of the implications of near-death experiences. Our very interesting guest is Dr. Jeffrey Long, who was with us a little over a year ago. Dr. Long is a physician and radiation oncologist and the founder of the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation nearly 20 years ago. Over 15 years of research went into Dr. Long's study of over 4,000 near-death experiences presented in his books, Evidence of the Afterlife, The Science of Near-Death Experiences, which was a New York Times bestseller, and his most recent book, God and the Afterlife. This is by far the largest scientific study of near-death experiences ever presented. Jeff has appeared on national media, including The O'Reilly Factor, NBC Today, ABC with Peter Jennings, The Dr. Oz Show, The History Channel, The Learning Channel, and National Geographic. He's also appeared on Fox News Houston and at the New York Academy of Sciences. Dr. Jeffrey Long, great to have you back with us today, Jeff.
Oh, David, it's a pleasure to be here. We've got lots to talk about.
We do indeed. Why don't we just start out from scratch? What's a near-death experience?
Well, no two near-death experiences are the same, but for my research purposes, and most other researchers accept this, you have to have two components of a near-death experience. You have to be near-death, in other words, so physically compromised you're generally unconscious or typically clinically dead with an absent heartbeat. And if you're so physically compromised that if you don't get better, you're permanently, irreversibly dead. Now, at this time where you're unconscious and should have no memory of that period of time, they do, and that's called the experience part of a near-death experience.
Okay. Now, is there a uniform agreed standard on what experiences somebody needs to go through to have it called a near-death experience?
In general, not. If you're unconscious or clinically dead and you have a lucid, organized experience, I think that meets a very reasonable concept of a near-death experience. Now, there's some research models that have developed a scale where there's some checkoff questions, 16 questions, and you have to have a certain score before it's scientifically a near-death experience. But I think, in general, if you've got a lucid, organized, unearthly experience going on when that should be medically impossible, you're having a near-death experience.
Yeah, it sounds that way to me. Now, some scientists who have not experienced an NDE themselves, an NDE, near-death experience, same thing, question if they're real. What would you say? What would you say to them?
Well, first of all, I certainly questioned that a long time myself. I have literally files and files exploring that possibility. But the answer to those scientists that believe it might not be real is there's been over 20 different skeptical explanations of near-death experience proposed over the years that cover the gamut of physiological, psychological, cultural explanations. And the reason there's so many of them, David, is that there's no one or several skeptical explanation that the skeptics or scientists themselves believe adequately explains near-death experience. And in fact, as we get into the elements of near-death experience through this talk, none of the skeptical explanations really explain any of the elements, let alone everything that's being observed in near-death experiences.
Do some of the near-death experiencers bring back knowledge that they couldn't get any other way in the earthly life?
Oh, absolutely. We have a small series where people encounter deceased siblings that they didn't know that they had. These are often children that have near-death experiences, and during their unearthly visit, they may find that they had a brother or a sister who either died before they were born or died within several years of them being born, and they didn't even know that. Their parents never told them. Parents often want to wait until their children are older before they can better understand death and better understand that they had a sibling. This is absolutely impossible for near-death experiencers to know, and yet they uniformly have that. A whole host of other things that near-death experiencers bring back that they couldn't possibly know. Information about their prior lives, when they have a lot to review their prior life during a near-death experience, information about other people. Sometimes they even are aware that somebody had recently died that they had no idea died, and yet they're encountering them in a near-death experience, and that's the first time they became aware that person they knew had actually died. So a really fairly large number of near-death experiences like this, very powerfully evidential for the reality of near-death experience.
Yeah. How many people have these near-death experiences?
They're really not rare experiences, David. A Gallup poll published in 1982 estimated that perhaps 5% of adults in the United States had a prior near-death experience. So they do happen. They're not unusual. Those that have that close brush with death and nearly die, about 10 to 20% will have a near-death experience. And we cannot predict, based on anything about the person, whether they'll have a near-death experience when they nearly die or what the content of the near-death experience will be.
Yeah, I know my mother, she had an out-of-body experience when she was in an operating room, this was many years ago, and basically she was above her body looking down on the operation, but she never had any of the other experiences, like going through a tunnel and so on and so forth. I guess I don't know if that falls into a category of near-death or if it falls into just plain out-of-body experience.
Yeah, that's what we actually have a fairly large number of those types of experiences, particularly during surgery, where there's no clear life-threatening event. I think the answer to that, as best I can tell in my investigations, is that both that out-of-body experience, like what your mother had, and the near-death experience, are subsets of a greater spiritual experience. These are all experiences that point that we, as human beings on this earth, have a consciousness that can exist apart from our physical body.
Yeah. Do most people retain knowledge that they gained in an NDE, or is a lot of that knowledge lost?
As far as the actual experience itself, what happened, what they went through, the great majority of people retain that knowledge, and typically in great detail. Now, interestingly, in some near-death experiences, they encounter what's referred to as universal knowledge. They suddenly, in this unearthly realm, during their near-death experience, have an awareness that they understand everything, how it all works. They come back aware that they understand everything, physics, mathematics, the history of the universe, how everything came to be, what it's all about, in a way that is far beyond their own earthly knowledge. Typically, when that's encountered, this universal knowledge, when they return to their earthly body, they are unable to retain virtually all of it. And in fact, one person who had a near-death experience, I think, described it very vividly as trying to put an ocean of this universal knowledge in the teacup that is our brain. It just doesn't fit.
Yeah, you know, I read your book, God in the Afterlife. I really liked it. A lot of things in it were extremely interesting. One of them was, that I remember, that it said that when somebody was having an NDE and their consciousness was expanding, they were afraid. They had the feeling that they were afraid that they couldn't fit it back into their body.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's very, very unusual. It does happen. If there's one thing I've learned in my research, you can essentially never say always or never about any aspect of near-death experience. There's always exceptions. The overwhelming majority of near-death experiences don't know fear, and in fact, don't forget they're in the midst of a life-threatening event and often very fearful of that which is nearly killing them. And then when they have a near-death experience, boom, they're suddenly not afraid, free of pain, free of discomfort or anxiety. And yet on the other people, they may, as you, the experience you described, they may cognitively say, wow, this consciousness, this expansion is unearthly. This isn't something that I could possibly have in my physical body. And I think that concept of people having a near-death experience may provoke a little bit of anxiety, but probably only for a brief time.
You know, there's a lot of studies that, that talk about, you know, the soul is different than the personality, and we are a small piece of our soul, and you know, when I read that in your book, I thought, I wonder if maybe that isn't the reason why our whole soul isn't in our personality, isn't in our body, in our consciousness, because it just doesn't fit in the human confines.
And I think that's a very good point, and that's certainly based on the evidence I've seen with near-death experience. I think to some extent it depends on how you define soul, but if you're conceptualizing it as the non-physical part of all of us that separates during a near-death experience and can interact and be a part of that unearthly, some people call it a heavenly realm, then I think we're on the same page about what a soul would be. And certainly, if you believe that our soul is eternal, then it's certainly not bounded by the finite time that we have here on our earthly life. And our soul is, of course, then by definition, much, much more than who we are here on earth. Okay. But during near-death experiences, they seem to retain self-awareness, who they are, what they are. It just seems to be, as you've said, the soul is a subset, or our earthly life, I should say, is a subset of that much greater part of who we all really are, which is our soul.
Yeah, I've often wondered why, and that kind of, you know, that gave me, you know, I don't know if it's the answer, but it gave me, something to think about, a direction to think as to, how and maybe why, you know, all of this works the way it does. Now you did what you would call a God study. I believe that's what you called it, in the God in the afterlife. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? You know, what was that all about?
Yeah, great question, David. You know, throughout my near-death experience research, and I've now reviewed over 4,000 near-death experiences, which is enormous, but the concept of God or some supreme being kept coming up over and over in near-death experiences. So finally, it was time to modify our survey, the questions that we ask our near-death experiencers, and I asked the key question, which was, during your experience, did you encounter any specific information or awareness that God or a supreme being exists? And to my abject astonishment, we're now up at about 500 respondents. These are people that had near-death experiences. 45.5%, nearly half, are answering yes, and only about 40% no, and the remaining about 15% uncertain. So, David, that really got my attention. Encountering God during a near-death experience, or a supreme being, or something like that, it seems to be a very, very common element. In fact, more common than the elements that people typically associate with near-death experiences, such as a life review or passing through a tunnel or encountering deceased loved ones. So I made a study from that question and the narrative responses that were provided by those having near-death experience after that, where they described what it was they were encountering, what it felt like, what was going on, and I was so amazed at those responses that the book, God in the Afterlife, was produced by that.
Did anybody come back and say that they were, after the NDE, were convinced that God does not exist?
Yeah, exactly one. This was a study of the book itself. We've got quite a few near-death experiences since I closed Accrual for the study that led to the book. At that time, we had 200, hundreds of sequentially shared near-death experiences describing it. In the question I actually asked point blank, the original wording of the question was, did you find information that awareness at God or supreme being either does, and actually the question is worded, or does not exist, and then there was a narrative to explain. So if anybody was going to encounter information that God did not exist, they were to answer yes to that question and then explain that in the narrative response. Out of hundreds of people that have responded to that question, exactly one thought that they found evidence that God does not exist. In scientific research, what's real is consistently observed, and the overwhelming you know, 99 point some percent of people having near-death experience that either were aware that God exists or does not exist, were aware that God really does exist, and answered yes to that question based on that. So the answer is it's vanishingly rare that people come back convinced that God doesn't exist. In fact, atheists that have had near-death experience that encounter God, and that does happen, almost uniformly return, as you might imagine, no longer able to be atheists.
Right. Do they see God, or do they feel God? They hear Him? What's the experience?
Sure. There's variable descriptions of God. Very often God is described as a light, unearthly, brilliant light, unlike anything they knew on earth, is one of the more common descriptors. Hearing God, being aware of God through that mechanism is not at all unusual. God, when God forms something other than a light appearance, can be variable. There's no, as one would imagine when one encounters something that is infinite and unearthly, there's really, I think, no limit on how God can appear to near-death experiencers.
Yeah. Where is God? Do they come back and tell you where He is?
Yeah, that's commonly addressed. God seems to be everywhere. God seems to be in us and a part of us and in everything in the universe. And that was a surprise to me, because I was not aware of that in my conventional upbringing and conventional religious training. But there seems to be a unity, a oneness, that all is a part of God and God a part of all of us. And in fact, not only is that common in near-death experiences that describe an encounter with God, but the first thing they say about their encounter with God is God's overwhelming love. And it's actually a close second to that profound connection, even unity with God.
So they're coming back and they're telling us that God is in the plants and the minerals and the stars and the galaxies and virtually everywhere. There's a spiritual presence of God. Is that what we're saying here?
Yes, that is correct. That is basically, and I guess it took me some time to think about that, given the almost uniformity of near-death experiencers sharing that information. But I guess if you really believe that God is infinite, that God is everything, then if you were to say God isn't in us, if God isn't a part of us, if God isn't a part of plants, then God really isn't infinite, is God. So the more I thought about this, I guess it all fit together, but it took me some time to think. But that is correct. God seems to be everywhere, is the remarkable and profound message from near-death experiences.
Yeah, it's like the universe is, as we see it, the physical universe is, you know, you could almost look at it as God's body, I guess, you know, and his spirit is within everything.
I think that's a very good concept, David. It really touched me deeply as I did I changed a lot in my beliefs and how I thought about God as I did this research. I mean, there was times I just almost had to pause and reflect on this amazing things that we kept coming out. And again, we're talking about a study of 277 sequentially shared near-death experiences that encountered God. So this isn't anecdotal anymore. And in fact, what's in the book and then the research discoveries I made have been corroborated by several hundred more near-death experiences that have been shared since then. So this seems to be absolutely the real thing, and it's remarkable. I mean, if you ever feel that God is far away, I think that's just a feeling we have. God never has been and never will be apart from any of us. God always seems to be there, available, and certainly, literally, a part of our lives every step we make, every day of our lives.
Yeah. It's an amazing concept. What are some of the messages that are commonly brought back from these experiences?
One of the most common is what they encounter in God is love. God is clearly all about love. In fact, some people say that God is synonymous with love, so the love seems to be the major power in the universe. So one of the most critical things is that's something we really ought to focus on our earthly life, is love. And that's important too. I think the other thing that's very, very important is the reality that there really is an afterlife, a wonderful afterlife, David, for each and every one of us. And I think that's a powerful, positive, and inspiring message, too. The closeness of God, that God is not far away, distant from us, and unavailable potentially during our lives, is a myth. That from every line of evidence we have from this huge study, God seems to be very much a part with us. And we talked about that a little bit, but I think it's worth bringing up as another key message we have. So those are some of the major concepts that came from my study of God in near-death experiences, as well as, if you will, the deeper spiritual messages in near-death experience.
Now we live in a world of judgment, and a lot of that comes from the religions that we were exposed to. What are they telling us about God and judgment? Does he judge us when we die?
That's a real good question. I mean, think about it, David. Can you imagine being in the presence of God? I mean, what would that feel like? What would that be like? For a lot of people, that is literally a frightening thought, and the reason it's frightening is that they fear judgment, that they fear that they've done some things during their life they're not proud of, and wouldn't that be an awful experience? Well, here's the good news. Again, from vast amounts of evidence in near-death experience, actually both in my own near-death experience collection and in others I've reviewed, it is rather striking that there's a lack of judgment during near-death experiences. For example, when you review your prior life in what's called a life review, almost never is there an external judgment. There's not some other being or even God that will come and pass some judgment on what you've done and what you hadn't done and if you could have done differently. The judgment is done by the person having the near-death experience solely and individually. And even when people encounter God, that's another very striking and often commented on thing during near-death experiences, that there isn't no judgment. What is far more striking is that God accepts people during a near-death experience for who they are, what they are, and everything that they are. Every one of us, and all those that have near-death experiences, when they're in the presence of God, seem to be seen by God as a perfect, if you will, beloved part of God. Love is a predominant feeling, emotion, connection, acceptance, and judgment is all but unknown in near-death experiences.
Yeah, in your book you talked about the life review. Which is, when you die, you look at, or when you have an NDE, and I guess when you die, you have a life review, and it's seen from three different perspectives: the individual's perspective, their companion's perspective, which is, I guess, who they're having the experience with, and a witness. Anyway, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's common during, let me back up a little bit, life reviews, about 15% of near-death experiences have them, but in our series that means we've studied about 600. So we've seen a lot of life reviews and near-death experiences. What that is during the near-death experience, often in an unearthly realm, they see part of their prior life or often all of their prior life. Very often it's described as their life flashing by very, very quickly, like on a screen, like on a movie screen is one of the more common descriptors. I mean, sometimes even as a seasoned researcher, I have to pinch myself and go, wow, this is amazing. I mean, these people may be decades into their life, and here they are, clinically dead or unconscious for a matter of minutes, and here they are seeing every prior event of their life. Sometimes these life reviews are what's called panoramic, where they're not only seeing their prior life, but they're also feeling, understanding what people they interacted with felt like and were thinking at the time they had their life review, which is astounding. For people to have that kind of ability to process that kind of detailed information is also a good example of the tremendous acceleration of consciousness that is very often described during near-death experiences. Now, to get back directly to your question, very often during a life review, there may be one or other beings around. They typically seem to be like a spiritual helper. They're there. They feel love from this other person. And even though other beings may be aware of the life review and what's going on during their prior life, as we discussed, there's essentially no sense of judgment. If there's any judging to be done, it's going to be by the person having the near-death experience. And I want to emphasize that, it's not like a punitive, punishing thing to review your prior life. It's just simply, this is what happened. It seems to be, as best I can tell, a learning situation. I mean, here was your life, here's what happened, and it can certainly be a very powerful tool for those that had a near-death experience to change some things that they're not so proud of in their prior life, to become more compassionate, loving people for the rest of their life. And that's the golden lining, if you will, in the life review that can really seem to help change people's lives for the better after such an experience.
Dude, you know, I've heard that what happens during the life review is we have an opportunity to feel how we made other people feel, both good and bad. And have you had that kind of feedback?
Oh, absolutely. We have scores and scores of experiences that I earlier talked about as panoramic life reviews. In other words, you're not only seeing your own life, but you're also seeing the interaction with other people amazingly from the perspective of the other person you interacted with. Literally, they become aware of seeing, hearing, and certainly feeling what your interaction with the other person felt like directly from the experiential perspective of the person they were interacting with. And sometimes there's some huge surprises in that. What they thought was just a minor put down of another person, they can understand could have rippled through that person's life and caused far more harm than they could have imagined. On the other hand, a very simple act of kindness to another person, they suddenly become aware how profoundly important that was to the other person and how it's going to affect that person's life as they continue their earthly life. So it's really shows in some way how interconnected we are, how profoundly important our actions are with other people, either for good or for ill, and how that can affect people in ways that we would have been absolutely inconceivable. The powerful take-home message from those kind of panoramic life reviews is love really is that powerful and can be powerful in ways far beyond what you could have imagined.
You know, we react to other people. And you know, they'll say something to us or such, and we'll view it in a certain way, and we'll almost always take it personally, or it's awfully easy to do. And very, very often that other person isn't looking at it that way at all. They're, you know, that it's got nothing to do with us. It's just the situation that we're in. Yet it can impact us just because of the perspective that we take.
Oh, that's a great truth there, David. It's, you know, communication on Earth is so limited, subject to misinterpretation, subject to be interpreted through the filters of the other person's prior life experiences. Now, the interesting thing is when communication occurs during near-death experiences, all those barriers to effective communication on Earth are gone. During a near-death experience, communication is almost uniformly described as instantaneous, comprehensive, complete, no possibility of misunderstanding. There's often a communication simultaneously of facts, thoughts, emotions, feelings about it, and all unambiguous and beyond any misunderstanding. So, you know, the good news is in the afterlife, all those barriers that we have to effectively communicating, even lovingly here on Earth, aren't going to seem to be anywhere near the same problem in the afterlife.
And boy, that'll be a pleasure, I'll tell you.
No kidding.
Purpose. Many NDEers, you know, find a new purpose in life. But, you know, what type of purposes, you know, are they bringing back and changing their life?
Oh, absolutely. I've also explored as part of my recent research the concept that near-death experiencers often come back with an awareness that about life's meaning and purpose. And in fact, we very directly asked that question in our most recent survey, and a very high percentage of near-death experiencers, again, state, yes, they did during their near-death experience find information regarding Earth's meaning and purpose. So what is that? And then, of course, there's a text box response immediately after that question. So as you can imagine, I was fascinated to see what people shared about Earth's meaning and purpose that they learned.
Yeah.
And I was very specific in wording this during your near-death experience, emphasizing that in the question to help assure that when they responded to that in the text box, this wasn't something that they learned about their life purpose outside of the near-death experience, but only explicitly during their near-death experience. And again, a whopping high percentage answered yes. And in the narrative, I guess for my the take-home lesson from what near-death experiencers were bringing back is perhaps first and foremost, David, is that our earthly life really is meaningful and significant. I mean, in an earthly world where there's so much strife, turmoil, misunderstanding, miscommunication, unloving actions by so many, I found that incredibly reassuring, that we're really here for a reason, for a purpose, and there's meaning to our earthly life. But what exactly is that? The predominant answer in that text box response to that question, again, we're talking hundreds of near-death experiencers. This is not anecdotal. The preponderant response was that our earthly life is all about love. That's what we're here for. Learn about love, share love, be a part of loving interactions with other, and that seemed to be the main thing that we're here for. Secondarily, further well down the list, knowledge, understanding, grow, develop would be probably a number two. And then certainly, you know, a relationship not only with other people, but awareness and relation with God.
So if you took the bigger picture and tried to wrap a concept around it, would you say that we're here not just in this life, but in life after life, to trying to perfect our soul, perfect ourselves?
Yeah, I think you'd have to define perfect, but there's no question that, and I think the more I read near-death experiences, I think we're living our earthly life for a multitude of purposes, not necessarily just only one, but certainly a part of what we're here for is to learn lessons. And I think we're learning lessons in what some people have a near-death experience call the boot camp of our eternal existence. In other words, we aren't aware, we don't have that universal knowledge, we don't have that profound wisdom, we're not moment by moment aware that we're a part of and with God every step of the way. And so there seems to be that illusion of separation, that illusion that we're all disconnected from each other. You know, we have the pain and misery that everybody has at times during their earthly life, and often a lot of pain and misery. So this is really the toughest, I can imagine, about the toughest way to learn some of these lessons that are possible. And yet, again, silver lining to all this, our earthly lives, even if they're difficult, are the tiniest slice of our eternal lives and who we really are. As part of our earthly life, I'm convinced that each and every one of us have lessons that helps us to grow, that helps us to grow as an eternal soul and as an eternal spirit, to understand the importance of love, to understand the importance of knowledge, to understand that importance of being a part of everything and being a part of God. And I think that literally there's some lessons, I think, not only on earth but also as part of our eternal existence, that are really best understood through experiencing them. In other words, you know, as a physician, I can read a book about how to treat a patient, but by gosh, there's no substitute for actually looking that patient in the eye, making those decisions, and having the personal experience of being a physician. So I think that's probably the big picture. The experiences we have here, the lessons, certainly predominantly about love, and I think that's something that's going to enrich each and every one of us throughout all of our eternal existence, and actually everyone else as well.
You know, we always are continually get the feedback that we have free will. Do you think we chose this life? Do you think we have to live it, or we chose it?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, one of the questions I asked in my most recent survey of near-death experiencers is if they became of awareness of other existences. And what I was specifically looking at was, you know, did we exist prior to our earthly life? And the interesting thing that seems to be coming up fairly consistently in near-death experience research is that, yes, we really, it's part of our soul. Remember, we talked earlier that all evidence points to our soul being eternal. Well, if you really believe that our soul is eternal, then by the very definition of that concept, it didn't have a starting point in a specific discrete moment in time. In other words, it has always existed and always will exist, and I think that's the closest to reality. So given that we have a soul that always has existed, I am reasonably convinced, based on my research, that we had an existence in what we now call the afterlife, which, by the way, seems to be our real true home, according to near-death experiencers. And I think in that realm, we were fully aware of what earthly life would be. I think, as you say, the concept of free will, I think we had some, and we even have many, many near-death experiencers describe the choice that they made to pick exactly what earthly environment they wanted, where they wanted to be, what family they would be born into, and actually, through their free will, make that choice. The key thing here, David, is that we knew how difficult earthly life was going to be. We knew that we would have the pains and miseries and difficulties and of course, the moments of joy, too. And we all knew that. And yet, because it is so important to have that earthly experience, the meaning and purpose of having that earthly life was so vital to our souls, we chose to come here. And that's the amazing message in near-death experiences.
Yeah, the pain is short, although it doesn't necessarily seem that way when you're going through it. But the pain is short, and the lesson lasts for eternity.
That's an excellent perspective on that. I think, and that's an important thing. I'd remind everybody that has those difficulties and even extreme difficulties in their life, it's not really who we are. This is a lesson we go through. Who we really are, our eternal, unending souls, and very much a vital, beloved part of God. That's who we really are. That's our heritage, David, and that's also our destiny. I think we just need to go through our earthly lives not feeling put down, not feeling diminished, but hopefully always remembering that connection we have with eternity, and that the universe, even when it seems not true on earthly life, the reality is the universe is actually ruled by love.
Do NDEers ever get specific direction to say, hey, do this, do that? Or is it the kind of direction that, hey, you're making, you've made some mistakes, you've hurt some people, you hurt yourself, and you need to think about this? How specific is the direction that the NDEers are coming back with?
Yeah, that's a good question. Interestingly, NDEers are almost never told externally by another being or by God, hey, look, you hurt someone, you had some shortcomings in their life. Interestingly, that's not information they get from other beings. That's what they come to understand on their own through the near-death experience. So getting back to that no judgment, which is very strongly consistent throughout near-death experiences. But as far as specific information, it is very interesting to me that almost never do near-death experiencers get specific information about a specific vocation that they should do. That's rare. A specific spouse or person that they should live their life with, that's an almost never. About specific tasks that they could do. And by the scores, we've had near-death experiences say, you know, I know that. I learned that life is meaningful and purposeful, and it's all about love and part of our eternal existence. But what am I supposed to do? And that's the part of what I think a loving, divine, creation of this experience would be all about. And that is, you don't get specific information. It seems to be you have to choose your free will. You have to make those decisions. You have to decide. And I think that's a critical step about how our earthly life helps us all to be stronger, more loving, eternal beings. We have that freedom. We have that responsibility to choose during this earthly life, and the responsibility, of course, to choose wisely and lovingly. And it is amazing how rare it is. In fact, that really is interesting to me. When near-death experience, I even had a recent near-death experience where they were told very clearly to be a teacher, and that was so rare. I emailed them and said, "Wow, tell me about that, because that's so rare." Well, that was decades ago, and it was clearly a profoundly important thing for them to be in this world. So while it does happen, at least some general, and of course they didn't say what kind of teacher. Mm-hmm. So while there's some direction, it's quite rare in near-death experiences. A lot of near-death experiences are left puzzling, but again, as best I can tell, just keep choosing, striving to do the right thing, make the right decisions, and I think that really is the right answer about what we're all supposed to be doing.
Which basically says that we are the creators of our own evolution.
Absolutely. That shows a lot of confidence, I think, in God and in all that's in the afterlife, that we've been given that right and that huge responsibility to have the free will and the ability to make those decisions in our earthly life, for good or for ill. Our decisions can be enormously helpful and powerful to other people's, and it can be, unfortunately, very harmful. But I think that's how we learn. I think, David, it's probably a huge universal soul truth that you learn both by what you do right and by what you do wrong. That's certainly been true in my,
right,
all through my
education. Matter of fact, you learn more what you do wrong. When things go well for you, A lot of times, you know, you're happy, obviously, and then that worked, but you don't really know why a lot of times. When things go wrong, you're dragged into all the gory details trying to straighten things out.
Yeah, been there. I think we all have, David.
Yeah, right.
And there's no doubt about that. I mean, it certainly during most of our lives, most things go well most of the time. It's
right.
The unusual aspect of our lives where things don't go well and we make mistakes. And, you know, maybe it's good that we're aware of that in this limited three-dimensional realm of existence we have now. I think we can, as you've said, you can carry forward those lessons that we've learned. We're not judged by it. We're learning by it. And that's very clear, almost uniformly in near-death experiences. I think it'll make us all better for what we are and who we really are, and that is the eternal beings.
The heaven, obviously, when people come back, they have a description of what they see, which we would call heaven or the spiritual realm. What type of things do they, how do they explain it?
Sure. When people, great question, that's fascinating to a lot of people. One of the common descriptors of the afterlife is, first of all, the concept of unearthly is used over and over in describing it. I mean, David, this is not something that they concocted from their prior earthly experiences. They're very clear that this is something completely outside of their earthly existence. Time, for example, as we know it on Earth, is almost uniformly stated as not existing, or at a minimum, extremely accelerated beyond anything on Earth. When you're in a realm of an unearthly realm, there can be landscapes, there can be plants there, and interestingly, when, for example, flowers or grass or trees or other things are described in these unearthly realms, they may be described as having colors that are so beautiful that there's no correlate, colors that literally do not exist on Earth because their beauty is so great. There can be other buildings, and of course there's other beings around, including deceased loved ones may be present. And during the whole time there may be, for example, music that they say is beautiful beyond anything that could possibly exist on Earth. Around this time, they're typically describing feelings of overwhelming love. Actually, the two most common words in near-death experiences are what they're feeling, peace and love, and often overwhelmingly, again, off the scale from what they knew. Their consciousness is accelerated. They seem to understand things far more than they possibly could have during their earthly life. Whatever pain, misery, doubt, uncertainties that they had during their earthly life are essentially always gone when they're in this unearthly realm. I mean, it is truly, I keep calling it an unearthly realm, but shoot, David, you can see from that descriptor, very appropriately considered in the minds of many people to literally be heaven.
The you know, people will think, well, if there's buildings and landscapes and such, why can't we see it? And is it because, you know, we have our five senses, maybe we have more, but we certainly have our five senses that we use all the time, and that's how we view the energy and the frequency that really is what creates the physical universe. Do you think that the heavenly realm is maybe right where we are? It's maybe not a different place, but it might be just a different state, a different set of frequencies that we can't see.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. These things that I described are not physical in the sense that we know physicality here on Earth. They seem to be more energy-based. And in fact, if any of your listeners want to do an exercise, you can take Einstein's equation, E equals MC squared, C is the speed of light squared. Units for that are distance divided by time. If you solve that equation for time, you'll see that in a realm where energy approaches infinite, time approaches zero. I've done the mathematics on that, which is fascinating. And I think that, interestingly, may actually, with that knowledge that we have on Earth, describe what's going on in these unearthly realms. Clearly, time doesn't exist. Motion doesn't exist. Communication is instantaneous. Consciousness is greatly accelerated. It's not these unearthly or heavenly realms are not an independent, separate from us, three-dimensional realm. They're absolutely something vastly different from anything we know on Earth. And I think the possibility that it's anywhere and everywhere may be a possibility too. And I want to emphasize, even as beautiful as what I described about these heavenly realms, I'm pretty sure that's just an approximation. I'm pretty sure that from what we've heard from people that have even deeper near-death experiences, that heaven can literally be infinite. It can present itself in an infinite number of ways, and probably they're having landscapes, buildings, and some people that appear humanoid during in the afterlife for some near-death experiencers is probably a creation that helps them feel comfortable and familiar with it. I think the ultimate truth of the afterlife is even far more beautiful, far more fantastic, and far more than anything that they could literally describe in words in our English language.
I suspect you're absolutely right. I think what we're seeing is just something that we can understand and relate to. How about frightening? Are there any frightening NDEs?
Yeah, there's many people, a few people, very few, will feel fright during a near-death experience, typically only briefly, often early, as they have consciousness apart from their body and they see their unconscious or clinically dead body below. I mean, it's such a unexpected, unfamiliar experience during their memory of their earthly life that it can be frightening, typically transiently. As far as experiences, and I've studied this, that are objectively frightening, or if you will, hellish, they seem to be about 1% of near-death experiences, and they can either be awareness during the near-death experience of some, if you will, hellish realm, some in a distance and aware of it there. Probably half or less at the time they're actually experienced or a part of a hellish realm for a short period of time. I want to emphasize that even though that sounds frightening, there's a couple very important concepts about my research on hellish near-death experiences. First and foremost, people that have these often come back and say, wow, that was a lesson I needed to learn to confront some things in my earthly life, to have some lessons, and to help me as a result of that be a better person. And there was really no other way I was going to come to understand that. So I'm still quite convinced that this can be a product of a loving God. And just some people, I get, I mean, 99% of people don't, but maybe 1% need a bit of a kick in the pants. And that serves as a kick in the pants. And I think number two, even those that do bring back some direct personally experienced observations in a hellish realm, over and over we hear that the beings that are there actually can choose to leave, again back to free will. So they can leave if they want, but they choose not to because that seems to be the environment that is familiar and comfortable to them. So I'm convinced from my NDE research that there really is no permanent irreversible hell.
Yeah. What research would you like to see done in the future on NDEs?
We need to have more prospective studies. We need to have people that are asked questions immediately after their life-threatening event using the best scientific methods possible. I'd like to see that. I think that's one of the most important things. We do have one major study ongoing, but we need more of them. It's very hard to get funding and hard to get hospitals typically to cooperate with research like that in an acute healthcare environment, operating rooms or emergency rooms. I think we need to have more research of all kinds. We need to have more retrospective studies like I'm doing. We need to study more non-Western near-death experiences. I have probably 50 or 60 of them in my archives. There's many more out there. Again, I think we can learn a lot. The more cross-cultural study we do, the more I think we can learn. And we still, and you might be surprised about this, David, we need to continue to explore the skeptical alternative explanations of near-death experience. I am convinced, as a physician and near-death experience researcher, that if you have excluded every possible explanation that has been very carefully considered for what we're observing during near-death experience, and you have to do that by considering these skeptic arguments, exploring them, seeing if it really explains all that we see in near-death experience. But after you've excluded every possible skeptical near-death experience, I think what lies beyond that is acceptance that near-death experiences are what those that have these near-death experiences almost uniformly believe, and that is that they were absolutely real.
Yeah. Jeff, we've run out of time, unfortunately. How can people find you, and what are some of the things you'd like to tell them that you're involved with right now?
Sure. Our website with all these thousands of experiences is NDE.com. rf.org. I'd encourage folks to share your experiences if you have them. We have a link there for that. And, you know, read as you would like what thousands of people have shared with that website over the years. It's by far the largest publicly accessible collection of near-death experiences in the world. So that, and I think keeping the very important message for your listeners, that profound message of hope, love, and reassurance that near-death experiences provides.
The author of God and the Afterlife, Jeffrey Long. Hey, thanks so much for being with us, Jeff. You've been a great guest.
Always a pleasure, David. Great interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.
Topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality, with your host, David Gagan. Engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've also launched a new podcast titled